Seneca was a revered Roman writer and philosopher who became the tutor to Claudius' stepson Nero when he was just 12. 5 years later, Nero became the emperor of Rome, and Seneca found himself in a very powerful position as his teacher, advisor, and surrogate father. At first, Nero's rule was characterized by moderation and reform, but it spiraled into decline with assassinations, revolt, and the undermining of the Roman Senate. James Rahm's latest book, Dying Every Day, tells the story of the moral corruption at the heart of power and questions whether it's possible in such an atmosphere to maintain a balance between the obligation to philosophical purity and the expediency of politics. It's published by Knopf. I'm very pleased that it brings James Rahm back to our show. Hello.
Thank you.
You said that there are two ways to describe the career of Seneca. What are they?
Well, he has his admirers who look principally to his philosophical writings and take him to be one of the world's great moral thinkers, as indeed he was. And there are others who would look at his collusion with Nero and the dark crimes that he had to help cover up or collaborate in and see him as a Machiavellian political figure.
Well, can both be true?
Well, inevitably, they both have to be because they're both the same man.
And how is he seen by his peers? Was he seen in both ways?
Yes, he had his admirers and his detractors, and so we have two very different legacies in the ancient sources.
Well, would it be possible to be in a position of so much power and not have many critics?
Well, he had particularly vociferous ones, especially regarding his wealth. He managed to accumulate a vast fortune while he was helping Nero. And
well, Nero gave him it, but he took it from other people to give it to him.
Yes, some of his wealth was inherited from people Nero had assassinated. But at the same time, he was praising poverty in his writings, so it was a huge disjuncture.
So is he a hypocrite?
I never call him that. I quote a couple of his critics calling him that. What I say is he was human, all too human.
Well, you say that the historian Tacitus is the best source we have for Nero's era. What did he think of Seneca?
He was very undecided, and in fact, he's my principal source, and I explore extensively Tacitus's portrait of him.
Now, Seneca was a Stoic.
Yes.
This was already a long line of philosophical thought, wasn't it?
Yes, indeed, going back to ancient Greece.
So how did the Stoics feel about the material world?
Well, there was a good Stoic argument for having wealth. It was not deleterious to one's character, and one could use it for virtuous works. Unfortunately, Seneca didn't employ that argument. He instead used a cynic attack on wealth in his writings, which made his own wealth look pretty shabby.
Was it the perception then, as it is now, that anyone who becomes rich in a political career might have done it a bit through corruption?
Yes, of course.
He came to his position through his job as a tutor. Had he been involved in politics before he was in that relationship?
Yes. He entered the Roman Senate in his 30s under Caligula, and that was a strange move in and of itself because, as a moral philosopher, he could have easily rejected politics the way his model Socrates did.
And Caligula, if anything, is a rival to Nero for worst emperor Rome ever had.
Yes.
So how did he wind up becoming exiled?
He survived the reign of Caligula into that of Claudius. And Claudius exiled one of his rivals, someone that he feared might be a threat to his regime, on a charge of adultery. This was a daughter of Germanicus named Livilla, and she was charged with having adultery with Seneca. So he had to be punished as well.
And he wound up writing treatises in Corsica during his exile.
Yes.
Did that enhance his reputation?
Yes, very much so. He was already known at Rome as the greatest literary light of his day at the time that he was recalled to become Nero's tutor.
What about his father or his family? Did they think it was good for him to get involved in politics?
No, his father had rejected politics and hoped that his sons would do so also. And one of the three sons followed his guidelines, but the other two went into the Senate.
Did the Romans have a system for educating an heir to the throne? We were very familiar with Aristotle and Alexander, but was this a common practice?
No, because the Principate was only four generations old at this time. There was no standard procedure, even for the succession. So everything had to be made up ex nihilo.
Was there an expectation that Seneca would help Nero cultivate virtue and wisdom?
I think it was expected that people would see it that way.
That he would give it a symbol of legitimacy?
Exactly. He would shed a kind of moral glow on the regime.
Do we know anything about their lessons or their relationship?
Very little, only that Nero's mother, Agrippina, was not in favor of having her son learn philosophy. She wanted practical instruction, such as rhetoric.
Well, Nero was a pretty troubled youth from the start. Even before he became emperor, he was already doing things which we, I don't know how much we want to get into them, but he was going out and committing crimes. Was Seneca even aware of that, or do we know whether he would have been?
Yes, he must have been, because he was Nero's closest advisor. It's strange that he turned a blind eye, even at Nero's earliest stage, to some of his character flaws, but practically speaking, he didn't have much choice.
Actually, he did those crimes after he became emperor, but he was still very young.
Yes.
And Seneca was there as his advisor.
Yes.
Seneca didn't use the wealth that he was accruing to do any good, did he?
Not particularly, but he did keep writing, and his writings had a very profound effect on his generation and perhaps even on Nero.
Now, was Nero next in line to become emperor?
He became that at around age 10 when he was adopted by Claudius. Claudius had a son of his own, and it's still something of a mystery why he adopted Nero rather than handing on power to his own son.
His political ascendancy was carefully planned and executed by his mother, Agrippina.
That's right.
What was her heritage, and how did she wind up married to Claudius?
Well, that seems to have been an effort to unite the two branches of the imperial family. Agrippina was the perfect member of the Julian clan. She was descended from Augustus and from Germanicus, the two greatest Julians of their day.
Agrippina turns out to be a real piece of work. Was Claudius aware of that?
He must have been, but he must have seen her as a necessary prop to his power.
Now, Seneca also tutored Britannicus, Nero's half-brother, didn't he?
Well, that's not known. He supported Britannicus at an early stage before Nero came on the scene. I think after Nero came on the scene, he was forced to back Nero.
Now, how much of Agrippina's support of Nero as the next emperor was in support of Nero, and how much of it was because she thought that she would wind up wielding the ultimate power? He was still a kid when he became emperor.
Yes, he was 16, the youngest ruler the Western world had ever seen, and I think that Agrippina was planning all along to use him as a lever to bolster her own power.
She would control him during his reign, at least the early years.
Exactly.
So Agrippina brought Seneca out of exile, even though you say she would have preferred that he get a practical tutor. Then why pick Seneca?
Because of his moral stature. He was known to be a great ethical thinker, and he would give Nero that much more legitimacy.
And did he feel, Seneca, that he had an obligation to Agrippina as a result of this?
Absolutely. I think he had to make some very torturous choices as the relationship between Nero and Agrippina broke down, and he had to choose between the two.
But he also is being put into an incredible situation where he can be the person who influences the future emperor and teaches him right from wrong.
Yes.
Where did it go so terribly wrong then?
As Nero matured and reached his 20s, he became more independent-minded and rebelled against both his mother, Agrippina, and Seneca, who was kind of surrogate father. He just wanted to be his own man.
Seneca wrote Nero's first address to the Senate. Its message sounds like the kind of speech politicians make in their victory speeches today, only then they go on to ignore it as soon as they take office.
Yes. He made all the right noises, and the Senate was wild about the speech. They had it inscribed in silver and placed on a public column.
What did he say?
Well, he promised the Senate they would have their old privileges back. They would have respect. They wouldn't be subject to mock trials in the emperor's bedroom, which is what Claudius had been doing. So it appeared that Nero was going to treat the Senate with its ancient dignity.
So we went from Caligula, who was totally out of control, to Claudius, who was seen as a corrective but presented his own problems.
Yes.
And then Nero was going to be the reformer.
Exactly.
I'm assuming we see this speech as Seneca's hope and design for what Nero would do as emperor.
Yes, it was a blueprint for a very humane regime.
My guest is James Rahm, whose latest book is Dying Every Day, Seneca at the Court of Nero. Why that title, Dying Every Day?
Well, that's a double meaning because it comes from Seneca's own writing, where he discusses death and mortality, and he regards life as dying every day, as a journey toward the grave. But it also describes his own nightmarish condition at Nero's court as things got darker and darker.
Well, didn't he write a treatise on anger at one point that advised good men to knuckle down to despots?
Yes.
To smile at the slaughter of one's kin?
Yes.
That sounds like the sort of thing a Stoic might say, but a rather distorted view.
Yes, very harrowing. And he goes on from that statement to a praise of suicide as the only route out of the absolutism that Rome presented.
So he doesn't sound as if he's advising people to speak truth to power.
No, not at all.
Why wouldn't somebody who is seen as a moral philosopher argue differently?
Well, one has to understand the power that the autocrats at Rome wielded. They had sole control of the military, and really they were as much in power as the North Korean despots today. They could execute anyone at the snap of a finger. So it was very hard to stand up to them.
Now, arguing that suicide is a route to freedom sounds rather distorted as well. Was suicide a common act at that time?
Yes. Both.
Was this like harakiri in Japan?
Well, sometimes it was a voluntary act like harakiri. Other times it was what's called forced suicide, where the emperor would essentially give you the choice of committing suicide and getting to pass on your property to your heirs, or being executed and having him take all your property. And in that situation, most noblemen chose suicide.
Initially, Nero depended upon his mother, and there was a coin that was issued that revealed that?
Yes. The only coin of its type at Rome, with two profiles shown facing each other, Nero's and his mother's, as though they were equals in power.
And then she arranged his marriage to Octavia.
That's right.
Was that a political, another one of those political marriages?
Yes, very much so, designed to produce an ideal heir and solidify the regime. But unfortunately, the marriage was a cold one, and Nero detested Octavia.
And we have any idea why?
Partly because she was his mother's choice. He didn't want his mother dictating his love life. And in fact, their first crisis was over his love life when he turned to other outlets and she insisted he go back to the marital bed.
He had a slave he preferred to his wife.
Yes.
Now, why did that bother Agrippina so much? I mean, men in power often have had mistresses.
Yes. It seems to have been a matter of the need to father an heir as quickly as possible and, again, bolster the future of the dynasty. If an heir came from the wrong source, it would detract from Nero's power and Agrippina's.
Well, and we'd seen similar things happening in the past.
Yes.
And that's why there are so many of these, the heirs have muddied, their line of ascension isn't always as clear as it might be.
Yes.
I mentioned earlier that Nero did some pretty crazy things. He would go out incognito into the streets at night and cause trouble.
Yes.
What did he do?
The kind of things that a hooligan teenager in a modern-day city might do, stealing from shops, beating up passersby, sexually assaulting passersby.
Why? I mean, he's the most powerful man in Rome.
I think it was just the rampant energies of youth.
And then he's beaten by somebody who doesn't know who he is, a young man of senatorial rank, Julius Montanus.
Yes.
What happened there?
The downside of going out incognito is that someone bigger and tougher might not know that you're the emperor. And Montanus beat him up without knowing who he was. And when he found out he'd beaten up the emperor, he committed suicide rather than face the punishment that was surely coming.
The rift between mother and son, well, there's all sorts of stuff that goes on here. There's a possibility that Agrippina wanted to have an incestuous relationship with Nero.
Yes.
Do we know these things to be true, or is this all part of the rumor mill that would have occurred in almost every court?
That's a very good question. The incest rumor is one of the hardest ones to pin down. I don't think any responsible historian can say whether it happened or not, but the ancient sources believe that it happened.
Now, so first he has this relationship with this slave acting, and then Agrippina gets even more upset when Nero becomes involved with a woman with political ambitions of her own.
Yes.
Poppaea Sabina. Who was she?
She was an older woman, a divorcee, about 8 years older than Nero, a very savvy and experienced power player who saw her opportunity to become empress.
Did Seneca write about any of these things?
No. That's the most frustrating thing in dealing with Seneca. He's very self-revealing about himself, his thoughts and feelings, but he had to leave his political life a blank slate because to discuss it in print would have been suicidal.
Now, Seneca earned much of his money from usury.
Yes.
Again, something that doesn't seem to seems rather questionable for somebody who discusses philosophical purity. His lending practices were seen as the cause of an uprising in Britain?
By some sources, not all. And here's another place where it's very hard to make a judgment call. But yes, one of his detractors says that it was his lending in Britain and his calling in of loans that forced the revolt of Boudicca, which was an immensely destructive episode for the Roman army.
Now, there are more assassinations and there are suicides. It's a complicated story, all messy. But did Nero actually fiddle as Rome burned?
That's one that I dismiss, although a recent historian has endorsed the idea that Nero set the fire of Rome. Whether he fiddled while it burned, I don't
think. Well, there
were
no violins
really
at the time. He probably would have been playing something like a kithara.
That's right.
James Rahm will be speaking with Jim Shapiro at the New York Public Library tonight at 7 o'clock. For ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. And then he will be at the Community Bookstore in Brooklyn tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Check our website for more information on that as well. He is the James H. Otway Jr. Professor of Classics at Bard College. His latest book is Dying Every Day, Seneca at the Court of Nero. It is published by Knopf. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.